then I came around.
Welcome back, guys. DJ SMK MOX. Good to be back. Thanks to everyone on the show for filling in for me last week. Meant the world. Thanks to everyone for all of their condolences and well wishes. And I kind of addressed everything in the opening segment. So if you want to go back and podcast that, you can do that at Odyssey.com or iTunes or anywhere where you get the podcast. Yeah, my mom's last wish was that I win the STL headliner.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, all right. We got to make that happen.
Too late. It's already
too
done.
Too late. Voting closed yesterday.
Hope we made that happen.
Hope we did. I hate to disappoint her.
Thank you to everyone who voted, by the way. That was very nice.
It was mostly me voting. I'll tell you that much.
I was voting too.
I think you got right a bunch of votes right here in the room, Dave.
Yeah. The first couple times I voted for myself, I'm like, what are you doing? And then I'm like, oh, it's been 24 hours. I can go vote again.
You don't think the other candidates? You don't think the other candidates are doing that too?
Oh, hell yeah.
Of course they are.
Of course.
No rules against it.
I started to say it's just a big popularity contest, but like that's exactly what it is.
That's what all of it is, right? It's like our whole business.
By the way, Kevin is so good, isn't he? Like when he just did the news, like you are such a broadcaster.
Oh,
it's true.
It's weird sometimes.
Being
a grown up,
I could never do that.
Yeah, you get used to that.
No. Are you kidding me?
Because I mean, I didn't. Yeah.
I can do this.
Yeah.
Okay. But when it's like that, what you just did,
the structure of
that's a different skill set. Yeah. I'd giggle.
I don't think that's true. I've seen Dave leap into action.
Yeah. I mean,
during enough like emergencies.
When there's breaking news
and
stuff, you just kind of like the hard part for me is shutting up. Like, keep it to 35 seconds, 40 seconds. I know. He's like, I'm on the clock here, dummy. Go faster.
So, for example, when my mom was passing and soft music playing and candles and hushed tones, can you do that?
No, I can't.
Really?
No.
Yeah, try to whisper. Give us an example of a whisper.
Of what? What do you mean?
Like if you were trying to tell us something.
What do you mean?
If you didn't want anyone to hear what you were saying, how would it come out?
I don't know.
You won't even try.
You've never whispered.
I mean.
No, he's never not wanted someone to hear what he said.
Yeah, that's true. Here, let me practice it. I think it probably sounds something
it's
like that.
It's still loud.
That's creepy.
Something like that.
Yeah, that's just creepy.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Don't ever
like, if
whisper.
I do that, it's going to sound, it's going to sound like I'm.
No, we get it.
It's going to sound like I'm threatening you.
Yes.
Don't ever do that again.
I don't like this.
I don't. I'm trying to get him to stop.
It's my fault. I asked him to do it.
This is going
to
be a thing now.
That's threatening?
Yeah, it seems like you should be fighting Batman. Let's do the big news about the Cardinal trade again since people are just joining us.
Yeah, so the Cardinals pulled off a trade. You know, tomorrow's the trade deadline, 5 o'clock. And just as we were coming on the air today, right about one, a little bit before, the news broke that the Cardinals are a part of a three-way trade. So they're getting two players that are going to really make a difference in helping them out. This is not the way to describe it. Like, they're not getting rock stars, right? They're not getting rock stars. They're getting very solid help that's better than a lot of the options that they have. So they're getting a right-handed pitcher named Eric Fetty, who's having a good year. I mean, like, I don't know if you've followed it too much, Dave, but the White Sox are having one of the worst seasons in the history of Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
They have 27 wins.
Ooh.
Okay, they are losing 75% of their games. They are 218.
And seven of those wins are his, right?
Yeah, he's got seven of the 27 wins, right? He's 7-4, 3.19 ERA. The things that are that go underneath all of that, like the expected batting ERA, the fielding independent, everything's good. There's no warning sign on Eric Fetty.
Is he a velocity guy?
No.
Is he a Sonny Gray guy?
Nah, he throws a little. He doesn't throw. He probably has similar velocity to Sonny Gray. Like he has a good fastball. He's not a 98 to 100 guy that's just going to blow you away. But I think his average fastball is probably. I could just look instead of guessing, but he's probably like 92, 93, but he doesn't throw four-seam fastballs.
Is he cute?
I don't know.
Oh, you know.
I don't know.
Yeah, come on.
I don't know. He's fine.
Yeah,
he's average. He's average.
I saw him earlier.
But no, he's his main thing was like he was a pitcher for the Washington Nationals for a long time, and
he was awful. But whisper it.
It's really not
good. No, I didn't mean it.
You ask, I'm going to do it. So he went to Korea last year to kind of get right. He got paid some money. He was not in the big leagues. But it's kind of the Miles Michaelis thing. Miles did the same thing. He went overseas, fixed some things. Well, what Fetty did was add a new pitch. He added the sweeper, which is everybody's favorite new pitch. And that pitch has been unbelievable for him. He throws strikes. He throws mostly the cutter, sinker, and sweeper. Like, those are the three. But there's nothing under the hood that scares you. There's nothing like, oh, my God, he's been lucky so far. He's been – everything is what it should be. And then they get Tommy Pham. So the Cardinals need a right-handed hitting bat to come off the bench or to play regularly. Mm-hmm. And Tommy Pham's had a decent year. So his overall numbers are about league average. His numbers against lefties are about 30% above league average. So he's been very good against lefties, which tracks with his career. He's always been that.
Is he a natural outfielder?
He is, but he's not nearly – he's not a good defender right now. If you're going to look at kind of how he's performed the last couple years defensively, it's not great. Probably limited to left field. My guess is they'll get him some DH time. But, you know, this is a player, and he was playing some center field for the White Sox, but keep in mind, the White Sox are the worst team in baseball. But he does a lot of the same things well that he always has. He's got a little pop. He runs well. He doesn't swing and miss at pitches outside the zone, draws his walks and all of that. So they're getting a good, solid contributor. And by the way, with Tommy Pham, you look at his numbers, he's hitting .266 and overall about league average. But the underlying stuff, like the batted ball numbers, say that he's been unlucky. Like, he actually deserves better, that he should be getting better numbers, which is a good sign.
Yeah.
That's typically the way you'd want it to be. You want to get the full – it's best if they're exactly the same, right? Like, if your numbers are good and the batted ball number is good, that's what you want. But if your numbers are just okay and your batted ball numbers are better, it indicates you still have more in the tank. There could be more there to get. So those are the ads. The guy going out is Tommy Edman. And it's all they gave up, though, which when you're looking at the current team's needs, you're giving up a player that hasn't played a game yet for you this year. And he has not played the field yet on his rehab assignment. So we're not really sure when he would be a factor in that regard. The Dodgers are a much different situation than the Cardinals. They can afford to wait another month for him to be okay, because their entire focus is on the postseason. And what they want for the playoffs is a switch hitting guy with speed who can play six positions and do a little bit of everything and hit left-handers well. The Cardinals have more today urgency because they're in a tighter spot. The Dodgers are more worried about the postseason.
Yeah.
And it tells you something about the value of Tommy Edman when you look at this trade, because that's all the Cardinals had to give up to get a guy that will be their second best starting pitcher.
How much would you love to be in a front office making these deals?
Nothing more. There was nothing.
Dream job.
There is nothing in the world I would rather do at this stage. I mean, like, old timey, I would be like, I want to be a player. But knowing that was never going to be, that would be dream job.
Just up on the board and all the different
breaking down
moves.
All the prospects, looking at the scouting reports, getting into all these nasty little weird things that I'm looking at now, like all the batted ball stuff. How do you fit their needs with your need? That's the fun part to me about trades, right? Is how these teams find a way. And that's why they had to bring in a third team. The Cardinals wanted to make a deal for Eric Fetty, but I don't think they wanted to give up the prospects that it would take to do it. But they found that the Dodgers wanted Tommy Edman, and they would give up the prospects to the White Sox. And the White Sox also gave them a relief pitcher by the name of Michael Kopech, who throws very hard, throws 98, 100 miles an hour, but he's wild. He's not very consistent.
Would you be, because the deadline's tomorrow evening, correct?
Yeah.
Would you be more surprised by another deal or no deals?
I would be surprised if the Cardinals don't move Dylan Carlson. I'd be shocked if they don't.
And give me an idea of the value he might bring.
What you're hoping is that he can get the relief pitcher that you want. You're not getting a top prospect for him. You're not getting an everyday player. You're not. I don't think you're going to get a front end relief pitcher. Like, I don't think you're going to look at the better relievers out there and like, oh, yep, I'm going to get that guy. But there will be teams that are going to look at a 25-year-old switch hitting outfielder who was a first round pick and
who's at his lowest.
Yeah, and he's at his lowest, and they'll look at him and say, we think we can fix him. Or we think he just needs a change of scenery, we will give up a reliever to take that chance. I'd say that that's, I wouldn't say 100%, but I would probably put it at 90-95%.
What about packaging him with a decent prospect?
Yeah, you could do that too. If you wanted to get a better relief pitcher, you could definitely add him along with one of your prospects to do something a little bit better. Yeah, I mean, the question is, are they willing to give up one of the prospects that it would take? We don't know who it is. There are a lot of relievers. But the prices on relievers have been pretty high so far. But we've also seen the guys that have been traded so far are the more valuable guys, right? Like the Angels traded their closer, Estevez. Well, he's been one of the three best relievers in baseball this year. He's a free agent at the end of the year, which is why they're trading him. Mm-hmm. But he's also been one of the best relievers in the sport. Tampa Bay traded a guy, Jason Adam, who's a very good reliever, not a closer, but he also has two more years of control. So he's got high value. We haven't seen kind of the secondary guys start to go yet in the relief market. And maybe, I don't think there's any question you could do it. It's a matter of whether or not you'll get the high quality guy just for Carlson, or if you have to add to that to make it happen.
And we so easily could have been in the position of the White Sox had things not turned around in the halfway through the season.
I don't think you'd been that bad, but yeah, I mean, you could have repeated last year. And if you had repeated last year, you would have been talking about trading Tommy Edmund. You'd be talking about trading Ryan Helsley. Everybody in the bullpen, really, Kittredge, you name it, those guys would all have value. You'd probably be talking about trading Kyle Gibson.
Yeah.
You know, it would be like last, if it were like last year, you'd be looking at that and maybe more, because it'd be 2 years in a row and you'd be looking to make bigger changes.
Yeah. 222,
make a wish. We were just talking off the air about this kerfuffle over the Last Supper. On the opening ceremonies of the Olympics, which they have apologized for. I didn't see it live, but I've seen, you know, photos and videos and such. And basically, it was transgender people, and they were supposedly reenacting the Last Supper, which they're saying, no, not at all. It was the Festival of Dionysus, and, you know, it wasn't the Last Supper at all, but it was close enough that a lot of people got offended.
Well, it looked like the painting.
It looked like the painting.
Right.
Yes.
Which is not an actual depiction of the Last Supper.
It's not a photograph of the Last Supper. Right.
And one guy, whether it was intentional or by accident, one guy had his stuff out.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't notice that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a treat. And so, yeah, a lot of people are boycotting the Olympics and such. And I had a thought on this. I believe, just my humble opinion, don't kill the messenger, I believe that any small group, whether you want to say minority or marginalized or whatever it happens to be, which would certainly include LGBT people, that the best you can hope for is equality. That's the best you can hope for. You can't reasonably expect people to like you or agree with you, because none of us can. As a middle-aged, fairly well-to-do white guy, I'm the only marginalized small group that I may belong to would be agnostics. I've been very open about my non-religiosity on the show, but I am not. I'm not a person who judges you. I'm not a person who will tell you you're stupid for your beliefs. I used to be a very devout Christian in my younger years, and I could be wrong, and I could come back to it at some point. Life is long, right? But I don't expect people to agree with me. I don't expect people to say, that's wonderful. And sometimes people will be quite mean about it. And like when that pastor, the Catholic pastor, wrote me a letter telling me how both my daughter Phoebe and I were going to burn in hell. I still have the letter. And that wasn't very pleasant, but I can't expect people to agree with my minority views or tell me how wonderful it is. All I can expect is to be treated the same under the law. I can't expect to be treated the same by individuals. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so when you are going to put on some sort of a show that is even possibly construed or misconstrued as to be a reenactment of the Last Supper, you have to expect that kind of response. And maybe that's what they wanted. Maybe they wanted to shock and get some coverage and get some people talking about it. But it just kind of drives me crazy when people expect you to love what you do. That's not in the cards. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I would agree, but I would also extend that to people who are religious. You cannot expect everyone to see the world the way you do.
Yes.
And it's okay to say, I don't like that, and I'm not going to watch it. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But when it becomes something more than that, when it's, this needs to stop, this needs to end, well, no, it shouldn't end any more than anybody else's worldview needs to end.
Agreed. Well said.
I don't know. I look at it and I'm like, they're French. I mean, they just,
the art they create is just different
than the art we create over here. And it's more provocative. They had a whole like menage a trois in the opening sequence of the Olympics.
What's that stand for?
I don't know. I didn't take it as a thumb in the eye of anyone, really. I understand Christians being upset, but also like, if they say it's not a reenactment of the Last Supper, it's something else, then it's like, okay, cool. Like, where's the beef at that point? Like, what is the big deal at that point? If you literally, it'd be one thing if they were stepping up saying like, yep, we were mocking you. Absolutely. That was our goal. And we achieved our goal. But I don't think that happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I get it's tough, but I mean, at the very same time, there are plenty of religious people who treat other people's beliefs the same way. Just like you're talking about with your agnosticism. I mean, you had a priest tell you you're going to burn in hell, which, yeah, really, really like Jesus there, right? I'm sure that's exactly how, you know,
he would have handled it.
The foundation of your belief system would have handled that conversation, right? I mean, like, I think we all need to do that. I think your general point, Dave, could not be more on the money. Like, you can say, I don't like that and turn it off and boom, that's it. But you can't tell anybody their worldview is wrong if they can't do the same to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And you said that the ratings were the best they've been.
So they had this is where I always come in as the sports guy, because people like, now the Olympics are going to tank because we're all going to tune out. And they had the highest ratings for day one of the Olympics since 2016. Granted, that's not a long time. I mean, that's only, 8 years. But people are not going to stop watching swimming and gymnastics and track because they didn't like the opening ceremonies.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX 233. I've been so wrapped up in everything with my mom that I forgot that my best friend Rachel's birthday is tomorrow.
Yeah.
Happy early happy birthday.
Thanks.
I'll get you a clake.
Oh,
that'd be very nice.
Boy, that chocolate clake. Yeah, I'll go buy the cakery.
Nice. You don't have to do that.
Oh, of course I do.
Well, and I get to have some too, right?
We'll see about that. Our buddy Brad Young joins us now. Hello, Brad. How you doing, my friend?
Dave, doing well. Thank you, sir.
So I got an idea of what President Biden is suggesting about the Supreme Court from listening to Total Information AM today. And I want you to go through all three of these things and analyze them for us. But let me start by saying it seems like that these have about the same chance as me winning the 100 meters in the Olympics. Like this feels political as opposed to real. Would you agree?
100%. Yeah, I'm going to have a head full of hair before this gets through. So, listen, I'm follically challenged. I know that joke doesn't work on radio, but listen, here, there's three things. And I think it's interesting that Biden proposed this today in an op-ed piece in the Washington Post. So that tells you something. But the three elements here are this. First of all, he's calling for a constitutional amendment to essentially reverse the Supreme Court's recent decision regarding the presidency and presidential immunity.
Mm-hmm.
So again, as everybody knows, if anybody who ever watched Schoolhouse Rock, in the 70s knows how this works, and you have to get 2/3 of a vote from each house, both the House and the Senate, and then it has to pass by 3/4 of the states. That's never going to happen.
No.
And when I say never, I mean zero, not a near zero. It is a 0% chance that happens. So you're right. That's political.
Yeah. It could be an amendment for free ice cream and it wouldn't pass with the way things are now. Wasn't the last one in 92 when it was about congressional pay or something like that?
Yeah. We also had, I have to go back and see when the last one, you caught me off guard on that.
That's
one.
Okay.
I'm not sure, but it's been a long time. It's been a very, very long time. And the Equal Rights Amendment has been kicking around since the 1960s, early 1970s. That's already expired. Some people are trying to revive it. Again, that's never going to happen. Mm-hmm. So getting a constitutional amendment is very hard. Unlike Missouri, where it just takes 50% of the vote plus one, and you can amend the Constitution. But that's a story for another day. Okay. Second proposal from President Biden today is to put term limits on the Supreme Court. It would be to put a term limit on them of 18 years. And so in theory, then when they cycle off every 18 years, you would get every president would essentially get a pick to the Supreme Court.
Okay. It's not going to happen, but no. I don't mind this one. And one of the reasons is there's nothing wrong with appointing 45-year-old people or 52-year-old people. They're grown people. They're very good. But no one's ever going to put someone in their late 50s or their early 60s who might be an outstanding jurist because they're trying to get 40 years out of them. And if you had an 18-year term limit or even something plus or minus a few years, you might get a better crop.
Well, and I don't disagree from a policy perspective. There's probably some wisdom in doing that. But two things. Again, because Article 3 of the Constitution specifies that Supreme Court justices have a lifetime appointment, you're going to have to get another constitutional amendment on that. It's never going to happen.
Yeah.
Secondly, I do like the irony of a guy who's proposing this, who's been in government service for 51 years, is proposing a term limit. I just find that rather ironic.
Yeah. And then the third one?
And the third one is he's calling for, and of all three, I think this is the one that has the greatest opportunity for actually doing something. He's calling essentially for a code of ethics for the Supreme Court. Now, the Supreme Court has supposedly instituted one, but it's voluntary. Mm-hmm. They can follow it or not follow it. And I'm not sure how that would mesh up because there was no actual proposal in the language of the op-ed piece today. But obviously, Biden wants there to be a conflict of interest and other ethics rules, mainly pointed at like Justice Thomas, who got, you know, RVs from billionaires. But then also you had situations involving, I believe it was Justice Kagan, who wrote a book and got a multi-million dollar advance and then had a case dealing with the book publisher and she didn't recuse herself. So, I mean, this is not just a conservative issue. It's on both sides. And I do think, contrary to what some legal analysts are saying today, they're saying that you would have to have a constitutional amendment for that. I don't think you do because there's one phrase in the Constitution that says Congress has the authority to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution all powers vested by this Constitution, unquote. And so since there's nothing in the Constitution about an ethics code, I think under that clause of Article 3, you could actually put an ethics code in place. The problem is, how do you enforce it? That's where it gets to be murky. So I know we're diving deep into the weeds here, Dave, but those are the three proposals. Out of those three, two have no chance in HE double toothpick. Hmm. And the third, I think, has a chance to get through Congress, but I don't know that Congress would do it.
So, Brad, your sense, because there are nine of them, and we don't know any of their brains or their hearts, but your best guess, the reason that they would not want a real code of ethics, is it for real reasons, like real defensible legal reasons, or is it more of a middle finger like, hey, separations of powers, look it up, we can do what we want to do?
I think it's clearly the latter. I think it's under the Constitution, we're a separate branch of government, and Congress, you can't tell us what to do. And I disagree with that when it comes to the ethics code for the reasons I just laid out. I think that Congress could pass it. For example, Congress has passed laws all the time to establish a code of conduct in other different areas. So they could do that here. And I don't think it would be a violation of the Constitution, but it does create what we call a crisis. You know, what happens if Congress and the president sign into law a code of ethics, Supreme Court violates it? What are they going to do? I mean, the only option left on the table would be impeachment, and that would be difficult, like we've seen every impeachment ever in the last 40 years goes nowhere. So that would be really the only enforcement vehicle if they would violate some hypothetical rules of conduct.
Okay, very good, Brad. You're great as always. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Dave.
Any thoughts on that?
Well, there's part of it that last part, if it's basically stay off our lawn, but these all of these branches cross over each other all the time. I mean, doesn't the Supreme Court rule that some laws are unconstitutional or something?
And they all work for us.
That's what I'm saying, right? Like, there has to be some kind of monitoring of each branch from the others. That's the whole point. You're not set up to be completely on your own with nobody to answer
to. But that's the argument. Roberts would argue that that's exactly what it is. We are completely ungoverned. We're governed by ourselves, and that's it. And we choose not to have this code of ethics, which I would think...
seems like a big stretch. And guess what? We get all the power.
I mean, I understand being protective of your little fiefdom. I understand that you have a lifetime appointment and no one can influence you. I understand the reasons for that. But just as consumer-friendly, knowing that you are so powerful and you are working for the American people, I would think that you would want them to sleep better at night knowing that you get it and you hold yourself to the highest possible standard.
I just think it's funny that there's currently a code of ethics that you either can or cannot abide by.
Right.
It's just whatever floats your boat.
Yeah, whatever you
want to
do.
What is the point?
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, the way that it goes, right? I mean, the whole point of each branch is to serve the best interest of the citizens. Now, everybody has a different view on what is best, a course of action. But the fact is that the people in Congress are there because we chose them to represent us, which means it's not them doing it. It's technically us doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe you have to put it to a popular vote. I wish we did that a little bit more. Like, you know, you do like a ballot initiative within your state. It'd be kind of nice if you just put it out to the general public and said, hey, on election day, this is up for grabs. Should there be an ethics code? And this is the ethics code. And then we just vote on it. And if you get 51%, guess what? Will of the people. But we all know will of the people doesn't mean crap. We talked about that on Friday.
This was the very first song I learned to play on guitar, and I played it in fourth grade.
That's so cool.
Wow.
At a little...
like a talent
assembly,
show?
Yeah. I think it was just me. I think I was like, I'm a really good guitar player. And they're like, oh, why don't you play for us? And I'm like,
fun fact.
Dave, will you tell us about whenever you were little and they made you go around to all the different classrooms and do impressions?
Yeah. So I did impressions when I was a kid. I still do, I guess. And they were like the most dated impressions, even for like 1971. I'm like, this would be Mr. Gabby Hayes.
He's like, W.C. Fields.
Yeah. All the kids are like, I did Nixon. And so my first grade teacher made me go to every class, first grade through sixth grade, and do the impressions. And I didn't want to because... I don't know, I'm a strange mix. I'm a performer, but I also don't want the attention, right? And so I had to go to everyone, which I didn't see this coming. But after that, the sixth graders just, for some reason, all I'm doing is putting my talent out there for you, and they would just slap me on the head. Like, I'd be walking through the hallway, going to PE class, and be like, hey, do Nixon, smack! And I'm like, I want to be a performer one day.
Yeah.
And someone knew someone who knew someone who worked as a producer in Hee Haw. And the old, like, don't dump it, little ding, ding, ding. And got some sort of an offer to do Hee Haw. And I absolutely declined. And my dad was so mad because he wanted to meet the twins that had the big boobs. And I was his meal ticket.
Why did you decline? Just because you kept getting slapped on the
God.
Head?
Oh, my God. Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't even want to perform for the second grade class, much less national television.
Well, it would have been a studio audience.
True.
Yeah.
And they would have known Gabby Hayes and Nixon.
And so I bet they wouldn't have hit you.
No, probably not. Can I be honest with you? One thing I missed on the show every day was getting Andrew's dose of weirdness. So you have a new fixation?
Yeah, okay. So I am totally into prison food right now. Right.
Oh, that's a good fixation.
How's it different from what you normally eat?
Well, that's kind of
like
what I
ramen and stuff like that.
Yeah, you eat ramen and hot dogs.
Well, it's more like I should say prison cooking, right? So not so much just like food you can eat in prison, more like
the
ingenuity of cooking with these limited ingredients.
How did you get into this?
Just watching TikTok, and you watch enough TikTok and eventually you get on
Prison talk.
Prison food TikTok. And so there's a couple people. The thing I really want to make, and I thought my wife would be so interested in this, and so I told her, it's something that they make that's called a Bombay. It is a It's like instant coffee mix, and then you crush up some Jolly Ranchers, and you put some water in, and you stir them together until it makes like a very deep red, like goop, almost from the coffee and the.
Mm-hmm.
You almost liquefy the Jolly Ranchers, and then you like pour that over some ice, and then you pour some soda over that, and it makes like ultra.
That sounds terrible.
Apparently, it's like. A ridiculous, it brings out all the caffeine and it's like the most ridiculous.
Man, you have a problem, my friend.
But my, and I thought that she would, I thought she would be so
Panera
into that.
Did you dirty.
I thought she'd be so into it. And she's like, this sounds like the worst, most disgusting thing.
Babe, you're going to love this prison concoction.
You're going to love this prison concoction that they make. And she pointed out, she's like, you know, they make that because they. They
can't get anything else.
Yeah,
right,
they don't
right.
Get
because they
else.
Can't get food right yet.
And I'm like, no, all we need is some non-dairy creamer. And we pour that into a styrofoam container along with some water and
crumbled up cookies
so and crushed up you, ramen. And then it makes a.
Are you more intrigued by the food side of it or more intrigued by the prison side of it?
That's a great question. I would say, I guess the prison side of it, right? Because it's
so like if I said, hey, I made a concoction, you'd be like, that's gross. But if I were a celly, then you would.
Well, if you made the same, if you made the same concoction, I mean, I'm always down for a concoction.
Sure, yeah.
But I guess it's just like the ingenuity of like how you would think to. I mean, they're making like, you know, like taffy candies and stuff out of non-dairy creamer and sugar packets and stuff. It's fascinating.
Yeah,
it's
no,
really
I,
interesting.
I think that is. It's pretty interesting. And you have a take on the Olympics?
They're just nuts. These people are. I understand these people work like their entire lives for this or whatever. But I can't even wrap my head around that. Last night at like 11 o'clock, I was watching like 13-year-old girls skateboarding.
Easy.
And they were like.
And you didn't even realize that the Olympics were on.
But no, they were. They were. Like really good at skateboarding, they're like Olympic medalists.
Yeah,
and they're like
the
literal
Olympics.
But they're children.
Yeah.
They're tiny children.
It's like, hey, these Olympians are pretty good.
I will say that is each sport is so interesting in that it's different, right? Like when you're a gymnast, especially the girls, you're at your peak at like 14, 15, 16 of your career.
That's crazy.
And other sports, you're not even you're an amateur. You're not even in consideration for.
Did
the
you
Olympics.
See the soccer player, the female soccer player, signed a pro contract the day before she turned 14?
Well,
13 years old, playing with grown professional women.
There's a 14-year-old boy who just played for the MLS team in Philadelphia.
Nuts!
Now he got in like garbage time in a blowout, but he's 14.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
How do you even know if you're good at something when you're 14? Like, that's the thing.
I mean, they signed him to, like, a multi-million dollar long-term thing to develop him. His older brother's on the team, and his older brother's only, like, 19 or
Nepotism.
Something like that. Yeah. But, no, this kid is, like, supposedly the best teenage soccer player in the country, so.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.